Welcome to Aviation Conversations, hosted by John Prisinos.
Welcome to Aviation Conversations with John Prisinos. Today's topic is entitled Helicopter Valuations, a Necessary Evil or a Necessity to Prevent Evil. John's guests today are Sharon Desfour, President, and Barry Desfour, Managing Director, HeliValues.
Welcome to Aviation Conversations, the podcast show series on aviationtoday.com. I'm your host, John Prisinos, publisher and editorial director of Aviation Today. With me today is Sharon Desfour, president, and Barry Desfour, managing director with HeliValues, the well-known firm that provides helicopter appraisal services based in Wakanda, Illinois. And the title of our podcast is Helicopter Valuations, a Necessary Evil or a Necessity to Prevent Evil. Sharon and Barry, thanks for taking time out to be with us today.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us, Barry. My first question is, you know, why does a company like yours, why does a company like HeliValues exist? Why are you here?
I think that HeliValues is like a fulcrum, John. You've heard the old quote, give me a lever long enough and I'll move the world.
Archimedes, well, I believe.
Yes. If money is the lever that's long enough and your helicopter acquisition is the world that needs to be moved, then HeliValues is the fulcrum that balances the value of that helicopter against the value of the money that you're borrowing.
So, Barry, you would concur with that, that the fulcrum is the perfect metaphor for your company?
I take it a little bit further than that. I look at the helicopter industry in general as being like a three-legged stool. I think that the three supporting legs of the stool consist of one that is representative of the manufacturers and their suppliers and vendors. The second leg of this stool is the owners, operators, maintenance, repair organizations. And the third leg is the finance sources, and whether they're a leasing company or a bank, it really doesn't make any difference. They're still a funding source, and the insurance companies. And if you take away any one of these legs of a three-legged stool, obviously the seat will collapse, will fall over, and you will not have, in our case, an existing functioning industry. So HeliValues is the, I look at it as the intermediary, the go-between between each one of these entities, explaining the realities of both the market and the assets, the helicopters themselves, in a language that's understandable and acceptable to the financing sources. Yeah, we speak crazy, so we get along very well with the bankers.
So whether it's a fulcrum or a three-legged stool, whatever metaphor you choose, HeliValues obviously plays a vital role in the helicopter market. You know, around the globe, considering the not insubstantial price of new or used helicopters, most helicopter operators can't or won't write a check for the purchase price. What are the financial and legal advantages of financing your helicopter acquisition? Can you shed some light on that?
You're absolutely right, John. Most operators won't pay cash for a helicopter acquisition, and well, they should not. Any common sense accounting says that you should never use operating cash to buy your capital assets. Save that for your operating expenses and use long-term liabilities to finance long-life assets, because any cash that you put into an illiquid asset is cash that you can never use for a business opportunity that may open up. So, besides being a better use of cash, what are the other advantages of financing a helicopter? Helicopter operators are becoming more sophisticated in business finance. They're becoming aware of tax advantages of certain types of finance structures. The easiest one is the best known, which is a true lease or a tax lease. In that situation, the operator gets to write off these lease payments as operating expenses instead of assuming the liability of a mortgage on a helicopter. Another advantage, using the same tax lease scenario, is the ability to keep an asset off the corporate balance sheet. Now, this could be an advantage in a public company where the stockholder perception is so terribly important. A lease can reduce the back-end risk of selling the helicopter at the end of your contract term. In a lease, the bank is taking all the risk of potentially falling markets or falling prices. On the downside, of course, then they also gain any potential increase in the values, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're into asset-based loans, you have the classic question of lease versus buy. Equity means the loan's the thing. With a loan, you acquire equity in your helicopter, which is available to leverage in other ways, whether by direct refinancing or by using collateral for another loan. So that's kind
well,
of
you know,
in a nutshell.
Well, you raise a lot of important points. It seems to me that there are many regulations, principles, guidelines, and standards extending to the bank or leasing company. You know, lenders, they must understand the asset. What are some of the key points to keep in mind in this regard? Why is it important for borrowers to know this, and how do valuations play a large role in all of this?
Well, the bankers and the helicopter people both have come to understand and acknowledge and appreciate the fact that familiarity does not breed contempt. The fact that if both sides know more about each other, they usually have a greater comfort factor in dealing with each other. And the more comfort factor they have, the more trust is usually developed, and the more trust that's developed usually translates into better business dealings.
Mm-hmm.
What's a better business dealing? Well, the fact that, as Sharon was talking about, as an operator borrows money to perhaps if they're doing what's called asset-based lending, where the helicopter is the collateral and the lender is lending against specific models, specific serial numbers, and as the note hopefully gets paid down and the operator ends up owning more and more of that asset, has more and more of it paid up, it's very frequent for them to go back to the bank where they borrowed the money and say, hey, look, you know, I borrowed $1 million on this $1.5 million helicopter. I only owe $500,000 of it now. I need to expand my shop or I need to purchase another helicopter for additional business. Only good things are going to happen with this money. Let me borrow the $1 million that is now the paid-off portion of this $1.5 million helicopter. And whereas in the initial go-round, the bank might not have said, you know, okay, you owe $500,000 still remaining. You know, it's $1.5 million. We agreed it's $1.5 million value helicopter. But, gee, I don't want to lend you that million, that difference, that loan-to-value ratio. I don't want to have it 100% in debt. But the second or third time around, they're more likely to agree, yeah, it's a valuable long-term asset. You're doing the maintenance faithfully and keeping up the value. So, yeah, we'll give you this $1 million or near the $1 million to refinance it, and you can go out and expand your business. So this trust factor, this working mm-hmm. together with the bank, is a carefully cultivated long-term relationship. The question of, you know, who says this thing was worth $1.5 million and now is still worth $1.5 million, or possibly in today's market condition, worth even more. That's where we come in.
I think Barry
talked
about risk versus
uh-huh.
incentive to lend money. The bank's only real incentive to risk everything, to risk their money against this helicopter, is the possibility of profit. But then again, if they ask for too much profit, they won't get the deal because there is competition out there. So a good appraisal will allow the bank to get an estimate of, you know, where the market's heading and what kind of discounts to offer for liquidating a helicopter in a short period of time, or estimates of future values, amortization schedules, fair rent calculations, all that kind of stuff can be done with the help of a good appraiser.
Well, you know, Barry, and you have talked about the importance for comfort and the importance trust plays in creating better business dealings. And it begs the question, when a company like yours, when a company like Helly Values conducts an appraisal, who or what do you represent? In other words, whose interests are you standing up for?
That's the live wire there. That's
third
sticking
rail.
your hand into the tail rotor right there. It's a very good question. And the direct answer, the short answer is, we represent the helicopter industry and the specific helicopters being appraised. It would be the kiss of death, literally, for an appraiser to even think about being on the side of, quote-unquote, on the side of anyone. No real appraiser could be on the side of the helicopter manufacturer, the borrower, or the finance source.
Well, you know, you talk about the kiss of death, and it makes me ask, what are some of the common pitfalls and mistakes that you've witnessed when prospective helicopter buyers seek evaluation? You know, give us some examples of what you've seen when things go horribly awry.
Well, in the today's market, what happens, fortunately, rarely does this kiss of death event happen. What we see are a series of possible bleedings to death by a thousand cuts.
Uh-huh.
A series of small errors which could possibly, in the long run, destroy a good banking or leasing relationship. And in today's market specifically, the most common event that could be problem or area of concern would be the practice of the operator trying to convince the banker that today's market bubble, and we are, let's face it, in a bubble economy. We have very high prices for new helicopters, and somebody anxious to receive a new helicopter immediately will pay a premium to take one coming off the production line now.
And I imagine a lot of that is driven by great demand in the helicopter business. And
classic scenario of
right.
Inadequate supply and unusually high demand. To the extent where we have the second part of this bubble economy, we already know premiums are being paid for some helicopters to not go to their original orderers and to go to somebody new who wants it at work tomorrow.
That's pretty cutthroat. Are you seeing a lot of that in the market right now?
Not a lot, but enough to know across the board. You know, it extends in everywhere from the smaller single-engine light turbine to medium twins, and we've seen it happen in the biggest, heaviest multi-engine helicopters, up to the Sikorsky S-92.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've got today in the new market is definitely some premiums being paid for new machines, and we have the unusual condition, which essentially has never really happened to the extent that it's happening now, and that is used machines, generally in low total time condition and recent years of manufacture, reselling in used condition for more than a brandy new one would be coming off the production line. So this is the classic definition of a bubble, where you have this price expansion growing exponentially. So what the first warning light that ought to come on is that a borrower, a helicopter operator looking to finance a new or used purchase of a helicopter may try to convince the banker that today's market bubble conditions are an indication of how strong the helicopter market may be for a long period of time, that this bubble effect is something that's not going to go away. So that's the operator's or the borrower's first mistake. The banker, on the other hand, is guilty of an equal mistake in the same area. The banker makes the common mistake of assuming that a strong, an unusually strong market condition like today will automatically be followed by a market crash, which will lead to severely diminished asset value. So we know that both of these approaches and thinkings are wrong, because not only history, but common sense and an analysis of the industry shows that neither of these extreme opinions is correct. The real world, you know, what's happening in real life here, will show that there is a progression that over, in our estimation, the next 3 to 5 year period of time, there will be a slow decline, a soft landing, a slow decline of the extraordinarily high used prices, 3 to 5 years, a relatively new 2-3 year old ship with only 500 hours on it, 600 hours on it, in 3 to 5 years' time will probably not be selling more than its duplicate coming off the new unit coming off the production line. We think that the bad news is that in 3 to 5 years, this market bubble will not pop, not explode. It will diminish. The good news is that in the meantime, all these helicopters that were in such high demand will have found places to work, which in many cases they were not working before. So the what we call the installed base, those helicopters that are out there working for a living, will be greater in number and be enjoying a higher profit for their operators on a per-hour basis.
Well, you know, Barry, all these interesting insights you've given us on the irrational exuberance in the helicopter market and the vagaries of supply and demand to make me ask, what are some of the valuation horror stories out there that have adversely affected operators' bottom lines? I know you've been in the helicopter valuation business a long time, and geez, in the trenches, you've seen it all. Share with our listeners some of the horror stories you've seen when it comes to helicopter valuations.
The one that I like to relate the best is the fact that if we're doing our job properly, everybody hates us, thinks that we're doing a bad job. Mm-hmm. That's when I know we're doing a good job. Because
a profit without honor, huh?
Yeah. Anyway. If the bank says you are in love with this operator or this helicopter that you're placing way too much value on it, and the operator is at the same time saying to me, Barry and Sharon, you guys are putting this value into the toilet so much that I'm never going to be able to finance or refinance this thing. At that point, I sit back and I say, ah, job security. You know, I know I'm doing right here. And we had a major North American operator whose contract and requirement we had for appraising their very large and diverse fleet for years and years had been an annual event. And that operation was later split up into semi-independent divisions. The good news was Heli Values continued to have the requirement to do the on-site looks, the inspections, asset confirmations of a small proportion of this large fleet. And we also had the continuing requirement to do the detailed desktop valuation of the whole fleet. But one of the division managers suddenly decided, you know, he didn't like us anymore. And he was making a lot of noises and came out and told me verbally that he was going to look for someone else to do the job. What do you say to someone like this? And Sharon actually had the best response, and I'll hopefully give that give that opportunity to her.
Sharon, share that with us. What was your response?
Well, the obvious was it wasn't up to that line manager who does the valuations. It's up to the company's bank. It's up to the company's investors. It's up to the company's board of directors. I mean, there are rules that you have to deal with when you're a public company. These statements of value have to go into the SEC filings for Wall Street. So all of this leads to the fact that you have to have something called a USPAP compliant report, Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. We have a Bible that we have to follow with certain regulations. And if you're a public company, you really need someone who can do that type of professional report.
Operators have become much more professional in their accounting and business management. And, of course, many of them have become public companies. And most countries, just like aviation regulations, their financial regulations are very similar around the world. And one of these things that happens is that if you're a public company taking public money, you have to make certain statements to your Securities and Exchange Commission. And one of the things you do is talk about your assets. And the statement from the assets, statement about the assets, usually has to come from a professional, unbiased source. And in many cases, as with this operator that we're talking about, what the manager didn't realize is that our valuation was quoted in part, almost verbatim, in the filings to the Securities and Exchange Commission, so that their rating, their credit rating, and their stocks and bonds would be rated favorably. Obviously, they quoted the good parts. You know, we said they that we were impressed with what they saw, and they liked the valuation that we placed on it. But this is mandatory. And with so many companies around the world doing similar things, raising money through banks and leasing companies, going public through issuing of stock, financial and accounting guidelines and requirements, and a lot of this comes back to us. You know, it's mm-hmm. very hard for someone to say, you know, oh, you know, don't worry about Helly Values doing this. You know, Helly Values has been involved with publishing the Helicopter Blue Book and keeping the specs and resale pricings for the last 30 years and is certified as an appraisal company, conforms to all the legal and accounting and appraisal requirements internationally. You know, don't worry about them. Last week I couldn't spell helicopter or appraiser, but this week I are one. You know, I can do this.
You know, well, you know, let me ask, everything you said raises another question. How can hidden vested interests, by vested, in the true sense of the word, vested means hidden interests, manifest themselves in the financing or leasing process to the disadvantage of the company, preclude this from happening?
Oh, it's not just to the disadvantage of the operator, John. It's to the disadvantage of everyone in the deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just once, but twice, we've had a bank telephone us for evaluation after the deal closed, trying to get an appraised value that matched what they'd already spent. Now, one of these is a funny story, but I have to set the stage for you.
Okay.
Your time frame here is the mid-1980s. Eurocopter has recently launched the Super Puma in the North Sea, and they took 10 Sikorsky S-61s in trade.
Uh-huh.
Now, those ships have been sitting in a warehouse for 3 years, and the S-61 market has been standing stock still ever since. Okay, back to the deal. This deal is for a very famous individual who has a real skill at getting people to give him money. He also has a very bad toupee, but I'm not naming any names. His banker called us wanting an appraisal on 3 S-61s at $6 million. Says Barry, it's not a conservative value by any means, but $6 million for 3 S-61s is fairly feasible. And the banker responds, oh, no, we need them to be $6 million apiece.
Yeah. Actually, what the quote from the CFO was, you idiot. And then there were certain parts of my anatomy that my opinion of value should be inserted, preferably without lubricant, according to him. And so, needless to say, we didn't do that job, but...
Well, it indicates an ongoing problem, which not only the appraisal profession, but the IRS and several other government agencies are aware of and trying to take action on, which is pressuring appraisers to give a valuation that will make a deal work. And
mm-hmm.
I've got to tell you, if you're doing a deal, it is not worth it. The IRS is going to come in, They're going to track it down. They're going to fine all the parties that are privy to that appraisal, and they're going to suspend the appraisers who contributed to it. It is just not worth it.
Well, that's an old.
If you're doing a deal, get a knowledgeable, qualified appraiser before you ever close the deal. Get it right.
Well, pressure on appraisers to compromise themselves for the sake of a deal and to cut corners. Certainly an old story in many industries, mortgage industry just being the most obvious one. But let's shift gears a little bit. How has new helicopter technology, such as more sophisticated avionics and maintenance, repair, and overhaul procedures, how has new helicopter technology, new avionics, MRO procedures affected the valuation process? Because in my capacity as a reporter covering the aviation business, I see all kinds of new leading-edge technologies really blossoming in the helicopter space. And I'm wondering, how does it affect
the price for it also exponentially going up? So
right, exactly. Of course, it's always the way. Yeah, how is it affecting the valuation process, I wonder?
Interestingly, these new avionics and glass cockpits are largely software-driven, and that's given them kind of a residual value or a future accountability of their very own. Not only, as Barry said, have the acquisition and installation costs gone up, but the anticipated economic useful life of each of these avionics has increased because of the ability to reprogram them with new capabilities right into the existing hardware. You take an EFIST or a multifunction display, all you're looking at is the picture while you're flying. The value of that display is in the software behind it and in the integration with other avionics. For heaven's sake, I think the only thing you can't link to a GPS is the ashtray nowadays.
Right, electronic flight bags, for instance, are increasingly sophisticated and connected to the Internet and get real-time weather data. You know, and the bottom line is that the helicopter market is undergoing historic growth and technological advancement. And my concluding question
really
is
nice is that the lenders of the differences now, they not only want to know, but they appreciate the importance of it, and they want to know its now and future value. So they're looking for the changing tide here has been that they're looking for the long term. Whereas before, the assumption was typical non-helicopter person's opinion of a helicopter was, gee, you know, it's not a question of has it crashed, it's just what time will the crash be. And their opinion has changed. They understand that they are long-term investments. And unusually, they have come to understand that a helicopter and its future value and its economic and mechanical useful life is not like a railroad car, not like a computer where in 20 minutes to 20 months it's trash and virtually worthless. They understand that these are 20, 30, and 40-year viable, commercially revenue-producing assets. So their whole philosophy of whether it's a lease or a loan, you know, this conversation, the bank would have said, you know, oh, maybe I can go 5 years. You know, if you really push me and give me 50% down payment, you know, maybe I'll go 6 or 7 years. And now the shortest term anybody really looks for is 10 years. And that's often restarted. And, you know, we're looking at lenders now, lenders and lessors who, you know, have come to understand that a 40-year-old helicopter, which has had all of its components renewed and has got a new avionics suite in there, the same thing as the brandy new one, for all intents and purposes, coming off the manufacturer's production line. And they're willing to look at it as that full-valued asset with a long, long economic and mechanical useful life. And this is what we've been able to prove out over the years through our appraisal records and our showing of the values in the helicopter blue book.
Well put, and that will have to be the last word. We're unfortunately out of time. I'd like to thank both of you for spending time with us, shedding light on this very important aspect of the helicopter market. Aviation Today will be running an entire series of podcast shows on helicopter valuations. This is the first one. Look for future installments on with Sharon and Barry. in which they offer insightful analysis on particular aspects of the valuation market and the dynamics of helicopter valuations. This is our first podcast on the series. Thanks for listening. Sharon and Barry, both of Heli Values, thanks for spending some time with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. It was a lot of fun.
We'll talk to you soon, then.
Absolutely. We will talk again soon. And this concludes this podcast, Helicopter Valuation.
Aviation Conversations is brought to you by AviationToday.com, the first choice of aviation insiders worldwide.